following program is sponsored. The opinions and statements made by the hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect the views of WBOB or its parent company, the Chesapeake Portsmouth Broadcasting Corporation.
Hey, with us now, Bob Thomas, Bob House of Delegates member in the Fredericksburg area. He's up for re-election. He's got a primary challenge on June 11th. He's a Republican. He's done a great job. And the John Fredericks radio show, 100% behind Bob Thomas. This is a key seat that Bob has in Fredericksburg. He holds the seat of the last year retiring Speaker of the House, Bill Howell. He was in a very close election with a Democrat, only won by a very small margin. Had he not won that seat, then Kirk Cox would not be the speaker. So his reelection critical to Speaker Cox and the Republicans holding the House again. Hey, Bob, great to have you, man.
Good morning. Good to see you.
Tell us, you sent me an email or a text earlier, which is why I wanted to get you on. And you're basically talking about, you're saying the issue is personal, and you sent this tweet out. You said, for my family, the issue is personal. Talking about life, you said, we believe every life is precious and every child deserves the right to life. That's why I'm in this race, to be a strong conservative voice for the 28th district and defend our shared values in Richmond. This on the heels of Georgia and new governor there, Brian I forget his name, the new Republican Georgia governor, signing the heartbeat bill, basically saying if you're pregnant and the fetus has a heartbeat, that you can't get the abortion in Georgia. Tell us how you see how that might play in Virginia and what you think about the third trimester and I guess birth canal bill that was put forth by Kathy Tran, your colleague there.
Well, I think we have Kathy Tran to help, to thank really for helping us get the momentum back on our side, not only here in Virginia, but nationwide. And I think we're going to continue to see common sense legislation passed. You know, when Roe v. Wade was decided decades ago, we didn't have the technology that we have now. We didn't have the ability to see into the womb and to see that human being inside the womb. And I think that's really helping take public opinion as well. You know, the Kathy Tran bill, we mentioned that in our video that I had sent to you. And, you know, one of the things that we're going to have to really use very hard in November to bring independents and left-leaning Democrats back to our side on this issue. We really have to point out that even though third trimester abortions are technically legal in Virginia, we haven't had one in over 3 years because we have very strong protections against that. And these are the very common sense things that they're trying to roll back. And when I have that conversation with independent voters, they say that, well, that's not what I stand for. Well, that's what the Democratic Party today is trying to push forward. So we have to make sure people understand what's on the line. And the reason we're trying to share that video so far around Virginia is because it's not just about the 28th district now. You know, if we had 66 delegates like we did at one time, it would be just about my race. But this is really about the whole of Virginia. And in that video, I said, thank God we have 51 delegates. Thank God we had 21 senators, because you know what? Those bills would be passed.
So, Bob, when you said we've only had one of these third trimester late abortions in Virginia in 3 years, and you said it's because of the safeguards we've put in place, what are they? Elaborate on that.
So, if you look, if you look at the code in Virginia now, there's several things they were trying to strip out. One, the woman has a right to talk to the doctor who's going to perform the abortion, and they wanted to strip that out of there. The second thing, you know, is that they have a right to see, you know, to see their baby. That's that technology I was talking about. And they wanted to strip that out as well. And right now you have to have not only the doctor who wants to perform the abortion, but also two other doctors agree that the woman's health is going to be severely impacted, basically not curable after we let this abortion go through. They wanted to strip that down to just have it be the person who wants to perform the abortion, who probably has a financial incentive to do it. Basically, they were the only one that had to say that the woman had, you know, an irremediably repairable physical or mental health condition. And as Delegate Gilbert pointed out, you know, our majority leader in that hearing you saw, if they remove that language, it would be any mental health condition. Mm-hmm. And those of us on this side of the issue think that, you know, we should deliver the baby and we'll take care of the mental health condition later. Of course, the woman needs that care. You know, and we're not targeting the woman here. We're just trying to make sure that they know that there is an option, that there are people that are willing to take the baby after it's born. You know, a lot of people on the left side say, well, nobody's adopting these babies. And that is absolutely not true. Newborns are adopted very quickly. It's the older children who probably have issues that are a little bit harder to get adopted out.
You know, somebody texted in and said, well, what happens in the Georgia situation? What happens if we have all these babies and the mothers don't want to give them up for adoption, yet they can't support them? Like, who pays for them? How do you answer that question?
Well, you know, currently the way it works is if somebody is no or low income, there are social programs in place, you know, to help with that. But one of the things that I've noticed, you know, digging into things like Medicaid, which is probably where they would be covered, is we have situations where you have a woman who has a child and then a man, and they purposely don't get married, so you can't track the income of the father who should be responsible. So, you know, we have to also help those women make sure that the fathers are responsible and they're providing that financial help that they need to be providing. So there's more to be done there to help those women and to support them in making that decision.
Bob, Jeremy in Chesapeake text in. We're with Bob Thomas, House of Delegates member, Republican 28th District. That's the Fredericksburg area, up for re-election in a primary June 11th. We've endorsed Bob Thomas for re-election. Bob, let me just ask you this. I've got a text here from Jeremy in Chesapeake. He says, how about getting rid of all the red tape to adopt in Virginia? Are you guys working on that?
Yeah, you'll see this year, there was a bill signing because it's so significant. Emily Brewer, who's my colleague down in the Suffolk area, she was adopted as a young child. So that's one of her passion areas. Mm-hmm. And in her first 2 years, she's been part of helping push a lot of legislation through to really streamline the process. One of the things we know is Virginia falls far behind as far as the number of children who are adopted by extended family members. So that's kind of a red flag to us that this process is probably too hard. So we've made a lot of progress just in the last 2 years trying to make that easier. And it's a very good point. That has to be an option that is available for people.
Bob, final question. I asked this with my lead. Governor Brian Kemp, Georgia, just signed a bill, basically the heartbeat law. A lot of people saying that, okay, infanticide, Kathy Tran, way too far, a bridge too far. We're not going there. Not interested in that, right? In your face, don't like it, bad. Now you got the other side, which is the governor of Georgia, Brian Kemp bill, heartbeat law, can't have an abortion in Georgia if there's a heart beating. That could be 6 weeks before even some women find out they're pregnant. Is that too extreme the other way?
I don't believe it's too extreme. I think the problem we have here in Virginia is, you know, we have a Democrat governor. We've had one for a decade now. And, you know, if we're ever to take the tide back and start putting some of those laws in Virginia, we have to find candidates who can win in blue areas of the state. Unfortunately, that's where I find myself and my colleague Tim Hugo. He's probably the last delegate north of me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have to win these areas where the governor won. The governor won my seat 2 years ago by 3 points, and we were able to outperform him. But I'll tell you, one of the interesting things that the Democrats are doing with my opponent in November is up in Arlington, where it's a very, very safe blue area, they're bringing opponents up there of these swing seats where I sit, and they're saying, hey, you need to adopt this guy because your money doesn't do you much good in Arlington because you can't get any bluer. But, man, if we could flip these couple of seats. So that's what we're going to try to reach out to the red areas, probably a lot of your listening areas. Say, hey, if your area is dark red and there's really not much more you can do about that, you certainly can help us, you know, in these swing districts and get us some support up here and help us on, you know, social media and we got to hold these seats and we got to take a couple back.
So, what's your website?
I would love to see Virginia move that way, but we have to have a governor who's willing to sign these things. So we have to make some real progress in the next 2 years.
Bob Thomas, what's your website?
The website is bobthomasva.com, and that's also the Twitter handle and Facebook as well.
bobthomasva.com. Bob, thanks for being with us. Really appreciate it.
I appreciate it.
Bob Thomas, let's get him reelected. This is the John Fredericks Radio Network. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Network. Joining us now live from Cairo, he's not a parrot, Eddie Uranian. He's our man in the Middle East. Eddie is a longtime veteran correspondent with CBS Radio News and also with The Voice of America. He's with us now. Eddie, live in Cairo. Good to have you.
Thank you, John. Nice to be on your show.
Oh, Eddie, you're so nice. So, Ed, let's go to Iran. We've got warships from the U.S. Navy going into the Mediterranean there and into the Persian Gulf, I'm sorry. And they're on alert. What is going on here?
Well, part of it is just the normal rotation of aircraft carriers. Since we pulled out the Stennis, which was in the Gulf up until about mid-March, according to the Arab media, I didn't actually check it out, but that's what they were saying. And part of it is sort of a verbal jousting with Iran, perhaps just to avoid getting into a conflict. Now, I see a lot of people interpreting this as a more bellicose type of situation. I'm not sure it is. But there are a couple of factors here that you're not going to see, you haven't seen in the mainstream media, probably because they want to parrot their own points rather than just give you facts and information.
Mm-hmm.
One of the facts that I was seeing is that Iran helped in the escalation in Gaza during the past week by giving Hamas, the Islamist Palestinian movement, some sort of new rocket launcher. I'm not on the ground in Gaza, so I couldn't actually check that out. I've seen it in the Arab media. I assume they're correct. If they're not, well, that's, you know, chalk that up to misinformation. But I don't think it is. A lot of those rockets actually hit and broke through the Israelis' Iron Dome defense network. So perhaps there is something new there that they got from somewhere. You have to ask yourself how that technology got into Gaza, given that the Egyptians would not be letting it through in the Sinai.
Right.
Had to have been perhaps Turkey or Hezbollah by sea. So anyway, as far as the, what else is going on, the Israelis have been upset about Syria, but the Arab media, Sharq al-Awsat, which is owned by Saudi Arabia, said that the Russians had actually forced Iran to pull back some of its more modern drones from Syria. So that's a positive point,
right,
which you're not seeing much of in the media. So a lot of things going on. I don't necessarily think we're heading towards a war, but certainly it's not a bright picture either.
What is the Iranian objective here, Eddie?
To spread their version of Islam and to spread their version of Iranian political system, their Iranian revolution. I don't know how popular it is. It's not very popular. That's why they have to build up these militias and send them all over the place in order to spread their influence. They've been supporting Hezbollah in Lebanon. Hezbollah is not very popular at all, but yet it controls the country. Hezbollah has not been popular in Syria either, and yet it's helped Assad win the war. The Iraqi Shiite militias are arguably a little bit more popular since there are more Shiites in Iraq than there are in either Syria or Lebanon. But at the same time, they've been supporting the Houthis in Yemen, and they're not very popular
mm-hmm.
either. In fact, they would not be in Sana'a if they hadn't won a war, even if you don't like the Saudi intervention on the other side. But still, the Houthis would not be in power, I guess, if it hadn't been for Iran supporting them. via Hezbollah, by the way.
Right.
And then they have their other militias in other places which annoy the Gulf states. They support Shiites in Saudi Arabia in the eastern province and Shiites in Bahrain. And arguably, those are Shiites, so they are helping people who are their allies. So it's questionable whether it's terrorism, given that they're allies, but at the same time, they annoy other countries in the area.
You're on the John Fredericks Radio Network and the John Fredericks Radio app. We're with Eddie Uranian. He's our man in the Middle East. He's live in Cairo, longtime veteran, CBS News, Radio News, and also Voice of America. Eddie, let's get to the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. Opposition there to the Israeli government, who was ever responsible for this, launching 600 rockets. Israel retaliates. What's the end game?
I think the point they're trying to make, the backers of Hamas, which is Iran, Hezbollah, you know, the Turkey, is basically that they don't like President Trump's deal of the century, which they haven't seen yet, but I think they are getting word from various parties as to what's in it. And I think they're just trying to squash the deal before it even comes to light. Apparently, they're going to reveal the deal after Ramadan. Ramadan just began yesterday, so we have another month to go. And already they're out there trying to sabotage the deal. I don't know what's going to come of it, if anything, but certainly squashing it before it started or you even heard about it is obviously not a good sign.
Well, nothing is going to come of it because what we've heard, of course, this is all conjecture, Ed, but what we've heard, it's in fact, just as a sidebar, everything is leaked in the Trump administration since he took the oath of office, right? They can't keep a secret in there. When somebody goes to the bathroom, it leaks, okay? So nothing has been kept secret except this. But one little thing got leaked in that it doesn't appear that Jared Kushner, the chief advisor to the president here, is going to propose a two-state solution, which basically makes it dead on arrival. What's also odd to me, and I'm going to criticize the negotiations here, is that you would have thought with the Trump administration making at least three major concessions to Israel and getting nothing in return, one of them, of course, moving the embassy to Jerusalem, one of them recognizing the annexation of the Golan Heights, and there's been others, you would have thought that those were concessions to the state of Israel in order for them to then turn around and accept a two-state solution. Absent of a two-state solution, I guess Kushner's idea is he's going to try to buy the Palestinians' love with money. I just don't see it. I mean, they have to save face. What are they going to say? We'll take, we'll take Mohammed bin Salman's check and MBZ's checks, and we'll take their money, and we're going to live for eternity under Israeli rule. I don't see it, Ed. Tell me I'm wrong.
No, I don't see anything really coming out of this deal of the century either, but one can always hope. I guess I've spent 32 years in the Middle East hoping that eventually they would come to some sort of a resolution of their conflict, but it doesn't look like that's going to happen. Obviously, if you read theology and the Book of Revelation, and you probably wouldn't anticipate a solution to such conflicts that way either. But at the same time, of course, people were optimistic back in the 90s. I remember after President Clinton got former Prime Minister Rabin and Yasser Arafat together and signed the Helsinki or whatever, that's where they negotiated them, the accords that they had negotiated at the White House. People were optimistic, and ultimately the Israelis, made a number of concessions. They pulled out of Gaza eventually back in 2000, I guess, 6, was it? And they pulled out of southern Lebanon in, I think, 2000. Of course, I remember at the same time when former Prime Minister Rabin was shot, a lot of Palestinians shooting their Kalashnikovs into the air in Beirut to celebrate. So obviously they weren't too happy about making peace with Israel, and a lot of other Arabs are not. But I would say probably the majority of people would like to see some sort of a solution, other than the noisemakers who are always complaining and shooting their Kalashnikovs into the air. I don't know what to say. Will they be able to find a solution? Perhaps not. And if they can just keep them from fighting, as we've seen the last week, they've been doing in Gaza, get them to stop that, perhaps that's an accomplishment in and of itself.
Well, I don't see how you're going to get peace without a two-state solution. I've said that forever. And having interviewed the chief negotiator for the Palestinians last December, I had an opportunity to sit down with him. I can't remember his name, and I can't say it, and I don't have it in front of me. You would probably know.
Sai Barakat.
Yes, Sai Barakat. I mean, there was just no way. And, I mean, their position was, we're not going to live under foreign rule. We're not going to live under Israeli rule. And then there's the whole face-saving measure. I mean, I don't see how President Abbas just says, okay, well, we're going to accept this, and, you know, thanks for rebuilding our schools and roads. And but we have no future. I don't see it. Look, but I'm not an expert in the area. So maybe, you know, maybe they're Kushner's onto something. I just don't know.
Yeah.
When you look at the concessions that the U.S. made to Israel and you say to yourself, OK, well, there's got to be a plan here. Well, apparently there is no plan that I can see.
Yeah, I guess what I'd have to say, I mean, I spent 20 years in Beirut, so I'm not normally a big defender of Israel. But at the same time, you got to understand that a lot of the land that people want them to give back as part of that two-state solution is high ground, mountains. And if you control the high ground and the Israelis are at the coast, they're very vulnerable to modern technology, which
right.
is, say, rockets.
Right.
And look what's happening from Gaza. That isn't
right.
even high ground. Imagine right. if they were shooting these rockets from high ground. So it's very difficult to pull out of those positions. So I don't know. I don't anticipate, so long as there is 10% of the Palestinian population that still wants to make more war with Israel, you can't have a peace solution. So even if it's on paper, it's justifiable and fair and whatnot, you just can't make that concession if people are going to go on the high ground and start shooting rockets at you.
Look, I agree with that 100%. One other comment I want to get. We're with Eddie Aranian here on the John Fredericks Radio Network. Eddie Aranian, longtime CBS veteran correspondent, also with the Voice of America, covers the Middle East. So, Ed, let's get to very, very quickly. I got 2 minutes. The Libyan situation. Where do we stand now with the Libyan government and some new people coming in? How does that stand?
Well, it's Ramadan. Ramadan began yesterday,
yes.
So people generally don't fight or don't fight a lot during Ramadan. So I think they're pretty much in a stalemate mode right now. The Eastern military commander, General Haftar, controls slices of territory around the capital, Tripoli, which is not actually controlling Tripoli. And the Islamist militias inside the city continue to control the center and the powers of government, whatever those may be. And the prime minister is the internationally recognized UN-designated prime minister, is visiting Italy, which is one of the last remaining allies he seems to have. So I don't know. I think ultimately this is going to end up the way Benghazi did. They'll fight for the next 2 years, and ultimately the Islamist militias will be pushed out. And I say that basically because more countries support Haftar than support the prime minister, Fayez Sarraj. And the internationally recognized government is basically the UN internationally recognized government, because it was designated by the UN and the parliament really never chose it. And in fact, the people in Tripoli are trying to split the parliament in half. So, I mean, it's mostly a political power game. And the goal, if you ask me, was to put the Muslim Brotherhood in power. And I can justify that statement with a number of a lot of reasoning that would take probably an hour, but we don't have that hour. So just suffice it to say that I think the international government, recognized government in Tripoli, is eventually going to be, defeated, subsumed by the army of General Haftar, but not quickly. I think this will take a long time.
Eddie Iranian, I want to thank you for being with us today. I'm out of time. Thank you so much. We're going to post this interview on our YouTube page throughout the day. Eddie Iranian.
Talk Radio, AM 600, 101.1 FM, WBOB.
With SRN News, I'm Gordon Griffin. Authorities say that a robbery suspect in coastal Georgia fatally shot a police officer and wounded his colleague before running away and being fatally shot afterward by another officer during a manhunt. The Georgia Bureau of Investigation says 50-year-old Savannah Police Sergeant Kelvin Ansari and 49-year-old robbery suspect Edward Fuller III were pronounced dead at a hospital. The president's chief economic advisor says he expects China to retaliate over increased tariffs after talks in Washington ended without a deal on trade. Larry Kudlow told Fox News Sunday that President Donald Trump's plan to raise U.S. tariffs to 25% across the board could take months to take effect. Officials say that air monitoring hasn't raised health concerns as the cleanup continues following a collision at a busy commercial waterway near Houston involving four vessels. This is SRN News.
All right, here's the great selling point of Relief Factor. Well, actually, the greatest selling point is that it works for the great majority of people who use it. But the big selling factor is really this. You can get all the pain relief benefits of Relief Factor without the negative side effects of ibuprofen. A couple of years ago, with great sciatic pain, I would take ibuprofen a lot. And it helped, but the side effects were so awful after a while that I just had to discontinue use. But that's not the problem with Relief Factor. So that's huge. So if you've been using any form of ibuprofen, now you don't have to with Relief Factor. Go to relieffactor.com, check out the pricing, and please give it a try because pain is pretty awful. Or call 800-500-8384. That's Relief Factor.
Here's your community calendar from WBOB.
Saturday, May 18th from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. It's the Fernandina Beach Marketplace Farmers Market on North 7th Street in Fernandina Beach. Saturday, May 18th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. It's the Military and Veterans Expo at TIAA Bank Field. And Saturday, May 18th at 7 p.m., it's the Jacksonville Sharks versus the Orlando Predators at ViStar Veterans Arena.
For more information or to have your event included, visit WBOB.com.
I can give you a brand new kitchen in days, not weeks, not months. Hi, I'm Jeff Martin from Martin Appliance and Greystone Kitchens with my secret formula for your new kitchen. Quick and easy and economical. 90% of new cabinets today are painted. Modern colors, crisp and clean. 90% of new countertops are granite or quartz. Impeccably stylish, incredibly functional. Our secret? We swap your counters and refinish your cabinets to the color of your choice at a fraction of the cost. None of the hassle. And done in days. Call Greystone Kitchens at 213-9100 for your secret solution. Come see us on Phillips Highway across from Regal Cinema. That's Greystone Kitchens and Martin Appliance. New kitchen, new appliances. And if you want new cabinets, I can do that too. I'm a licensed contractor for crying out loud. Florida State License CGC 1526479.
What you see is what you get. Martin Appliance Family.
SNC Square Roofing, everything you should expect from a roofing contractor and more. Hey, it's John Vitas, the voiceover guy. SNC Square Roofing replaced my roof, and I'm here to tell you, my wife and I were amazed at their quality of work and how well they kept the job site so clean. SNC Square Roofing, from the estimate to the last shingle, you can count on a job well done. SNC Square is a certified CertainTeed shingle master applicator. Give my roofer a call today. SNC Square LLC, roofing with integrity. Call 524-8621. That's 524-8621.
The John Frederick Show.
You're on the John Frederick Radio Network and the John Frederick Radio app. Thanks for being with us today. I am your Godzilla of the truth in America
We're here at the Electric Co-op. Gang's all here. This is the Republican Roundtable in Andrew Vihar's beautiful new executive conference room. He's arrived. He's not here right now. He had to go step out for a second. Also here with Chris Saxman of Virginia Free. Now we're going to call him an America First advocate. With us, a complete convert. Here's the president in Panama City yesterday talking about trade and saying that the European Union absolutely kills us on trade, and he's going to put a stop to it, as he has been. This is President Trump rally yesterday. Kara, cut nine.
We are now putting America first. For years, we lost in so many different ways. We were losing on trade. We were getting beaten by people and countries that had no chance. We were insisting that no NATO members, you had to see this, the NATO folks, they don't pay their fair share. They were supposed to pay. We were taking over and spending almost 100% of our money to protect the countries in NATO, which is Europe. And I said, that's not right. On top of that, the EU absolutely kills us on trade. It's all changing, folks. $100 billion extra was just given by those countries that's now pouring into NATO. Because they said, you got to pay up. Your past presidents would go and meet them and wouldn't talk about it. Or they'd say, gee, whenever you get a chance, maybe you could pay up. You got to see. It was like a chart this way. Now it's a chart like a rocket ship the other one. They're paying up. $100 billion they paid. $100 billion with a B.
$100 billion, they said. So, and I mean, going right to, directly to the American people, average people person looks at this and saying, yeah, why am I footing the bill for NATO? Why aren't they paying their fair share? Now they are. So another victory for Trump, right?
Well, it goes to a lot of the fiscal conservatism that runs through many Americans, not just Republicans, but a lot of fiscally, you know, moderate to conservative Democrats who are saying, look, we don't mind helping other people, but when the oxygen masks fall out of the ceiling in the airplane, you put yours on first.
Right.
And we have to be able to pay our own bills. And I'm not going to pay for someone who's not going to pay for themselves.
Right.
And that's the point he was making on Europe. Look, we'll help you out. We'll have troops stationed in Germany and Italy to make sure the Soviet Union and Russia doesn't come across the border anymore. These things, bad things go on. But we're not going to get screwed on trade at the same time. And Americans are not consciously aware of these things, these elements. And when he brings it to a very conscious light in a very simple sometimes inelegant manner that people can understand, they go, oh, yeah, we are getting screwed. I don't like that. I'm like for someone who's going to defend us and defend me. And that's what they're responding to.
And how
to.
Do you campaign against that?
It's tough to counter-narrative.
But especially if you're a creature of Washington, like Joe Biden, who was vice president for 8 years, who was in the Senate for 20 or 30 years prior to that, that's tough to run against.
Well, this is the protectionist ish light, protection is light, I might want to call this, goes to a lot of union households as well from a strain. I've talked to senior members of the Democratic Party, said, this used to be our message. This used to win for us. Why aren't we taking it back? Or why aren't we saying, yeah, we agree with you on this, we disagree on that? They're not drawing that distinction in policy because at the end of the day, it has to resonate with the American voters that this is going to help me. Politics is about the future. And not about the past. And if they argue about the past and they get caught back up in this collusion narrative, it's a losing issue for them.
All right, let's get to energy. Andrew, I want to get you involved here. The president yesterday in Panama City saying that we're unlocking American energy. And, of course, a lot of people my age remember the gas lines and odd and even days where you could buy gas. And we remember inflation at 15%, interest rates.
Oh, remember President Obama? We're not going to be able to drill our way out of this.
We're not going to be able to drill our way out of it.
Everything was the new normal.
Apparently we did.
Until it wasn't.
Until there wasn't. Now, how long ago was that he said we can't drill our way out?
I'll find it. I'll Google you talking about it.
Okay. Let's go to President Trump, cut 13. Again, Obama saying we can't drill our way out of this. Trump, who campaigned on energy independence, one of the cornerstones of his campaign, now saying that we're unlocking American energy, cut 13.
Not too easy. We're unlocking American energy. The United States is now the number one producer of oil and natural gas anywhere in the world. One.
It's hard to imagine, Andrew.
Yeah, he's exactly right. And what he's talking about is an all-of-the-above energy approach. You look at what we're doing in terms of gas production, oil production. To the extent that domestic oil production can stabilize gas prices when he has a dynamic foreign policy against Iran where it otherwise might disrupt such a market, you look at what he's doing with China and tie all this back to the trade deal. China has been flooding the solar market, just one example, with dirt-cheap solar panels that they've been subsidizing by their government to the extent that almost every American solar production company has gone out of business. There are a few. But with these trade deals, you're starting to see the American solar industry come back as well. And the solar market has gotten to a point now where it is actually competitive. You start to see that here in Virginia with what the co-ops are doing, what the investor-owned utilities like Dominion and Appalachian Power are doing in bringing on thousands and thousands of megawatts of renewable energy, wind and solar. It's becoming cost competitive. So you're in the midst of an energy renaissance in this country where you're exporting more oil than anyone else in the world. We have a natural gas boom that is revitalizing economies in places that used to be ghost towns. But you also have a resurgence in renewable energy where it's actually becoming viable to the point of being usable on a day-to-day basis. You know, the missing link there is battery storage. And once you get batteries involved, then all of a sudden solar becomes extremely viable. You hear people talk about 100% renewable power, and right now that's not a reality because you don't have a way to store that energy. You don't have a way to generate energy at night when the sun's not shining. You put battery storage in that, then all of a sudden, if you wanted it, you could have 24-hour renewable energy power. And it's the types of foreign policies and economic policies the president's putting in place that's going to unleash that kind of American entrepreneurship to go and solve those problems.
There's so much in this energy sector. Now we have companies that are being created and they're being funded by Bill Gates in particular, one in carbon engineering, I think, in Canada, where they're extracting from the atmosphere carbon dioxide and turning it into fuel. There's one company that calls itself Global Thermostat. Think of that. Their company name is basically regulating the temperature of the planet, right? Because of all the technology that's being there. March in 2011, President Obama said, you know, we're not going to be able to drill our way out of this. We must break our dependence on oil. Okay, we will eventually. 50 years from now, I don't think it's going to be a primary source of fuel.
Right.
I think we're going to see a lot of technology come, but they're transitional at this point. And, you know, that was when gas was $4 a gallon. You know, it's $2.50 now. It's deflationary. It's at mid-1960s level when you cost compare it to inflation. This is just the renaissance that's occurring largely because of technology. And if now we have companies that can take carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere,
right,
and we're already reducing our emissions here in America, let's go solve those emission problems in India and China, and let's solve the problems of the planet on climate change. We can do this and still grow our economy.
Exactly.
Joining us now, Kelly Sadler. Kelly is the communications director at America First Action, the number one political action committee supporting the president's America First agenda. Let me make that clear. Supporting the president's America First agenda and his policies. Now, Kelly Sellers, the new head of communications there, she was special assistant to the president in the White House for 2 years, did a phenomenal job, and I know her very well. She got a new op-ed out. That's really cool. Hey, Kelly, great to have you.
Nice to be on, John. Thanks for having me.
I know, right? Now we're like, it's like reverse roles, right? You get to come on my show. Instead of
it's gonna be fun.
Yeah, so I'd tell what Kelly did. She was an absolute beast in the White House, and she ran the surrogates program. So all of the White House surrogates on television and whatnot, she was the liaison. She put everything out. She was just phenomenal, and did a fabulous job there. But decided to move on. So we're happy to have her at America First Policies Action. Kelly, you did an op-ed last night talking about Joe Biden's big lie, of course, one of many, where he went to a rally and said the tax cut had no impact on middle America. What the hell is he talking about?
I don't know. I mean, he's running as a blue collar, fighting for American workers, but, you know, the president is already doing that. And so I don't know what planet he's living on where, you know, 3.2 GDP growth, smashing expectations, is kind of not in line with where he is. I mean, under the Obama administration, where he served as vice president, we were told that 1.9 GDP growth was the new normal, and we should just accept that. We were also told that, you know, jobs are going to move overseas, and we're just going to have to accept that. I mean, we were told, the American worker was told, you didn't build that. You know, you didn't build that. You, the government, helped out with that. We know where the Obama economy went, and it was in a recession. It was muddling along. There was wage stagnation that was just like, hey, you need to accept it. We're living in a globalist economy right now, and things are going to happen. Well, you know, the president campaigned on this. He campaigned on putting the American worker first, on deregulation, on historic tax cuts, on, you know, reviving, you know, the industry in middle America, and he has done that. I mean, if you look in Pennsylvania, where Joe Biden was, he was in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania under O'Biden and Obama lost 200,000 plus manufacturing jobs. This president's already brought back 500,000. So in that, you know, this is in that state alone. I mean, this is something that, you know, I can't even imagine he's going out on the stump saying that the economy is bad, because we already know that his policies hadn't done anything to improve the economy. And then to say that he's going to repeal the tax cuts, which he just did. I mean, the tax cuts that put, you know, basically in the average American home, they earned $2,300 on average because of these tax cuts, and we're seeing what they're doing for small business growth. We see what they're doing for this, you know, for this economy that is like the hottest economy in the world right now.
Look, as the president said, our economy right now is the envy of the globe. We're getting over 3% of growth. And you're right. It wasn't that long ago where Joe Biden said, well, 1% growth is the new normal in the global economy. The European Union is getting 0.03 growth. We're getting 3.2%. So every economic indicator through the roof in this economic resurgence, and the tax cuts have been at the cornerstone of this. As you say, average family of four saving $2,900, as my family did. Average family of just two people saving $1,500 if you go to the tax table. By the way, if you're like, oh, my refund was less, go to taxcutswork.com. Taxcutswork.com, run the table, and what happened is a lot less money was taken out of your check every 2 weeks or every week, however you get paid. That's why your refund was lower, because you got to keep the money during the year. That's what the Trump tax cut has done. It's inspired small businesses. But Kelly Sadler, every single economic record that has ever been traced, devised, or tracked has this economy at an all-time high. Black unemployment all-time low, Asian unemployment all-time low, women's unemployment all-time low, wages growing at 2.3%, 2.5% consistently. So we're getting jobs, we have a full employment economy, we're getting wage growth, we're getting small businesses open. I bet you didn't know this, Kelly, under the Trump economic plan, the women have opened up more businesses in a two-year period themselves than's ever been recorded in the history of the U.S. or the Department of Labor. Let me tell you another fact, right? Of those, 63% of those black female women. So, well,
wow.
Right, black women. 63% of all the jobs opened by women, black women, right? Never been seen before. But said Joe Biden has to lie about the economy and say it was a tax cut for big corporations.
Well, it's just the gaslighting, and we're seeing this among all the Democratic candidates, because quite frankly, they do not have an economic plan that can even rival what the president is doing. Instead, we're seeing them pitch all of these crazy socialist ideas. Government takeovers of healthcare, Medicare for all, which is going to cost $32 trillion, and no one has any idea how it's going to be paid for. The Green New Deal, you know, $12 trillion. Basically, you won't be able to take an airplane anymore to go visit your family because of the emissions that that puts out. These are crazy policies that these socialist crazy policies that all these Democratic candidates are running to and then saying, oh, and then basically gaslighting, and the media has a big part in this. Let's just be very honest. I mean, in terms of when this tax reform was passed, saying, you know, this isn't going to benefit the middle class Americans, this is just going to go into corporations, and it's led to this distortion. They have to lie and they have to distort because their policies alone, they don't have any solutions. I mean, they're for open borders. Therefore, it shocks me that you have, you got to go into towns like Pennsylvania, you got to go into Michigan, you got to go into Ohio and basically lie to the folks there. And who are you going to believe, these lying Democrats or your own lying eyes, you know, and the pocketbook that supports it? I mean, people are feeling more optimistic about this economy. I mean, you see this, and you see this translate into the president's approval ratings. I mean, Gallup just came out with a poll this week where it puts him at an all-time high of 46%. Now, that's 2 points higher than President Obama was at this point in his presidency in April 2011, and he went on to win re-election. So we're feeling very confident.
Wow, I got to tell you, Kelly, 46%, highest it's ever been, higher than Obama right now. We're with Kelly Sadler. She's the new communications director at America First Action. That is the number one political action committee supporting President Trump's America First agenda. And Kelly Sadler spent 2 years as a special assistant to the president in the West Wing in the White House. And you're on the John Fredericks Radio Network, trucking the truth across America, and the John Fredericks Radio app. Kelly, let's cut to the chase here. The president's ability to beat Biden in a reelection campaign, Biden getting into the race, surging in the polls, kind of shocking to some people. The CNN polls got him, one of the polls has got him up over 40% in a 25-person field. Is this going to shift? Is this fleeting? What do you see here?
Well, I mean, we have, what, now like 21 people running for the presidency on the Democratic side? He's just one of 21 or 22 if de Blasio gets in. I think that there's a long time to go here, and Biden is part of the swamp. He's a swamp creature. He's got a long, long record and some shady dealings and bad votes in that record. And so what we're going to do is I'm going to sit back and watch these Democratic, you know, primaries of these debates with a, you know, bowl of popcorn and a glass of wine, because it is going to be not everyone's even going to make it on the stage. They're candidates that we've never even heard of are going to be going after, you know, Biden and his record. And, you know, you saw the Ukrainian story come out the other day by the New York Times, of all places, about, you know, conflicts of interest while he was serving as vice president with his son, Hunter Biden, who was on the board of, you know, several Ukrainian companies. There's a lot of time to go. There's a lot of dirt to dig up. And quite frankly, we don't really feel that much pressure coming from the field as it is.
Kelly, let me ask you this. Kamala Harris the other day, I think it was last night, comes out and criticizes the mainstream lying fake news legacy media and says they're not covering women in the campaign. They're only covering men. But of course, she's not criticizing, you know, like media like me, because I cover her every day. But the people that the Democrats have depended on to carry their water, like CNN and others, New York Times, Washington Post, etc. Are you starting to see a crack here in the dam?
Well, I mean, you know, there is at this point. I mean, if you remember the Republican primaries back in 2015, there were 16 candidates in the race.
Yep.
And everyone was complaining about the fact that they weren't getting the media, the news coverage that, you know, President Trump was. And the reason why President Trump got all of the media attention is because he was the most exciting candidate in the race.
Right.
Saying things that the American people wanted to hear in plain spoken language, you know, right. Vowing to defend and champion the forgotten man. Going against the system, going against the establishment,
right.
Promising to drain the swamp. And right now, if you look in the and going on doing radio, I mean, you, John, you know, you were the first person, you know, who identified how Donald Trump was different, and it's one of the first supporters on the Trump train saying, you know, this is going to be a revolution. We just don't see that in the Democratic field. There's nobody there that's inspiring, that's saying something new, that's promising to go up against the swamp. They're all swamp creatures themselves. So man, woman, like, the sex doesn't matter. It's about what you stand for, what your policies are, how you're going to govern. I don't believe in this sexism stuff at all. I mean, Hillary Clinton won the Democrat. She was basically the uncontested, you know, candidate, the blessed one by the Democratic Party. And at this point, you know, in the election cycle, she was the clear front runner like Biden. She was going to run away with it. She had the best organization. She had the best structure. She was all going to be the next president. So, you know, she just ran a really bad campaign that was uninspiring and didn't have any messages. And what we're seeing from the Democrats are, you know, kind of uninspired campaigns that are the most exciting things that they're saying are all of these socialist crazy stuff like Medicare for All and the Green New Deal and open borders, and Beto's going to take down what border wall exists. He's going to crack through it. And then you have Kirsten Gillibrand saying, oh, I think that's a good idea. Let's take down an existing border. I mean, it's crazy talk. And it's not identifiable with the concerns that, you know, I as a mother of three have, or, you know, people in Pennsylvania who they're just not addressing, and they're not inspiring. And so her lack of press coverage is because of her lack of good ideas.
Well, I can't think of one idea that she has other than basically open borders. I think one of the candidates said you should not have, was it, well, not a candidate, I think it was AOC who said, we shouldn't have any illegals that if you come into the country, you step foot in, you should just be illegal and get all the benefits and everything else. So there's a lot of bizarre things going out there. Hang in there, because I got to go to a quick word from our sponsors. I've only got a couple more minutes, but I do want to get an opportunity to share our listeners with your website, your Twitter handle, so they can follow you on that. So hang on just a minute. Quick word from our sponsors. We're going to be right back. Kelly Sadler. Kelly Sadler, so great to have you on. It's been really exciting, and, you know, we go back a long way, and I'm so proud of you, what you've done. You're fabulous to work with, and I love your new opportunity here. You're going to make a lot happen as a communications director at America First Action. People want to follow you and America First on Twitter. How do they do that? What's your handle for our listeners?
So my handle is at Kelly Riddell. That is my official Twitter feed. And you can follow us at, you know, at America First Policies and at America First Action PAC as well. And go to our websites. I would encourage, you know, the policies website is dedicated to kind of explaining all of the actions and the policies that President Donald J. Trump has enacted to put Americans first, and that's at AmericanFirstPolicies.org. And then the America First Action is our super PAC. We are the officially blessed super PAC by, you know, the president, and you can go there and donate, as well as, you know, kind of get into all of the recent news, all of our recent op-eds, and that's at A1APAC.org.
All right. Thank you for giving us all that. We're out of time. Kelly Sadler, great to have you on, Communications Director at America First Action. Thank you so much. Let's make this regular America First Action, the super PAC for the president, and America First Policies supporting the president's agenda. There's a lot of phony PACs out there. The president just made an example of one the other day, not something you want to get involved in. Anybody can just put their name on it and say it's the president's PAC. This is the PAC sanctioned by the president. Kelly, thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much, John.
You're listening to the John Frederick Show. Common sense for the Commonwealth. On great radio stations across Virginia and online anytime at thejohnfrederickshow.com.
America's Godzilla of truth.
You were the only radio host in the country, John, who said Donald Trump should get in this race, and when he does, I'm going to support him the second he does. You were the only guy saying that, if you remember. Because I remember.
The John Frederick Show.
Everybody else tells us now, you and I, they were there on day one. They had these major roles in the campaign, right? It's amazing. It's amazing.
Stay connected online and take him wherever you go. To get the free John Frederick Show app, follow on Twitter at JF Radio Show.
People literally just make things up. Amazing.